And welcome to Minute 19 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we take a wild trip through the 1987 John Hughes comedy Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again on this lovely Thursday is Alan Sanders of The Wilder Ride. Welcome back, Alan.
Thanks a lot, buddy. Really appreciate letting me hang out for a few days more.
Well, if you behave yourself, you got one more day. So we're good with that.
I love it. I can say I made it to the end of the week of one week of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Yeah, that's a longer period of time than Dell and Neil had to make it through it. A week? Come on. None of them had to deal with a week.
No, aren't there adventure? Like, isn't it really just across 3 days?
Yes.
Everything takes place basically in 3 days. Wow.
Yep. And it's not even broken up into 30-minute segments. You know, it's not as if you say, okay, we have a 93-minute movie, so each one of these days is going to take up 31 minutes. It doesn't, you know.
No.
Because we're already moving on to we're in the night between the first and second day, which we're going to talk about. All right, so minute 19 begins with Neil taking a look once again at the very small room that they have been given. And it goes all the way till we see Del putting down a pillow on a bed. So as we were talking about yesterday, the two of them reach the motel. They unfortunately found out that there's only one room left, and the two of them have to share this room. And they get to the room, and they see that it's, or at least we see from Neil's perspective, it's much smaller than he had expected. So he's pretty shocked about it. And yesterday at the end, we had him looking around and trying to take it in and trying to figure out, okay, what is he going to do here? And this minute just continues with that. We see Neil still in shock about the size and the small area that this room, you know, fills up. And then Del just starts with a little bit of chit-chat.
What I like is Del, who should be somewhat familiar with this hotel, seems every bit as uncomfortable all of a sudden with this situation, even though he asked for it, even though he committed, even though he was the one who said, I can hook you up. He even feels a little put out. We saw him looking around the room, and I love this bit of aimless dialogue.
Yeah. I mean, next week we'll get into a little more aimless dialogue between the two of them. You won't be here for that, but you know, when they start talking about sports and things like that. But here, you know, he just starts talking about, oh, hell of a cab ride, right?
Yeah. Like, he got nothing else to say. Just go back to the cab, and then I'll let you go. His response, it's so Dell. It is so John Candy's version of coming up with something to say when you've got nothing to say.
Yeah, it's a great cab ride. You don't see cabs like that too often, you know. Well, come on. As we discussed earlier this week, how many 1968 Pontiac Bonneville cabs are you going to find that are souped up the way this one is?
Right. No, but the funny part, after we, you know, earlier this week, we realized it felt like, anyway, that Dell and the cab driver were at least somewhat on a first name basis.
Yeah. They're slightly acquainted, but then again, as you mentioned yesterday, Dell is acquainted with everybody.
True.
You know, as we talked yesterday, even about the little script part where, you know, when he finds out that Fritz Oberman or whatever his name, you know, died, and he knew who the guy was.
Fritz.
I mean, come on, it says so much about Dell.
It does. It really does. And you're right. It is a crazy cab. But of all the things you could talk about, like, just like, that's some crazy cab, huh? You don't see many cabs like that, do you? It's something you say when you're so nervous you don't know what to say, so you just sort of state the obvious.
Yeah. Now, and again, if Dell already knows Doobie, so he's been in his cab beforehand. So for him to even say that this is going to be this, you don't see cabs like that or too often. Dell, as far as Dell's concerned, every time he's in Wichita, he sees this cab.
Right. Yeah. This is my ride. My personal Uber driver.
Yeah. This is the guy who will you know, charge $150 for a small little trip down the road. As long as someone else is paying.
You also, with Steve Martin's character, it's one of those things where were we further along in the misadventures, that's the kind of line you want to just slap the guy. You're just like, shut up.
Yeah, exactly. But Neil's a little nicer than that at this point.
Right.
He's not physically abusive.
Right. And he hasn't gotten to that point yet. We've got to still build. We'll get there.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I will. You won't.
Well, Neil will. I'll be along for the ride watching the other episodes. But
exactly. Listening, not watching.
Listening. Well, you gave me access to the folder, so I like to kind of look at the minutes ahead of time, too.
Okay, you can do that, too. That's fine. You can keep having access to that folder. No problem.
I refresh my memory. I'm like, what are they going to talk about this minute? So I love it.
Right. Exactly. And so then Neil starts, like, he puts his jacket down on the chair there, and he puts his hat down, and then, like, you see him walk over to, there's like a shelf above, like in the pseudo closet, not even a closet, it's just hangers on a, you know, and there's like a shelf above the hangers, and like he dusts it off, just again to show us what type of seedy motel he's dealing with here. You know, this place is not clean. He's got to blow it. He's got to blow and clean off the dust before he's willing to put his hat down over there. You know, which it says a lot about him also. And Del doesn't do any of these things. You know, Del's the type of guy who, you know, he deals with every situation the way that it looks, the way that it is, and doesn't really, you know, all right, so it's a little bit dirty. It's a little dusty. No big deal.
Can I tell you that if I had to put my wife and I in this situation, I'm definitely Del. My wife is definitely Neil.
Oh, for sure.
If it's coming to a hotel. Now, if my wife's out walking the Appalachian Trail or hiking, she's totally fine roughing it. But if she's paying for a hotel room, she wants to know it's clean sheets, clean surfaces, clean floor. Everything's been like, she's the kind of person who would bring a black light out just to make sure that there's not any remnants of bodily fluid somewhere.
Yeah, my wife is the exact same way. We've been to like certain hotels or vacation places, and she, you know, after we leave there, she says it was very nice, but we're never going back there. It wasn't clean enough.
And for me, having been in the military, having been, first of all, being the oldest of four boys, and boys in general aren't necessarily the most fastidious of people when they're younger, I've never been bothered unless it's just true in your face grossness. I mean, I'm not going to sleep in a bed that's got, you know, like something sticky underneath the sheets or something. I mean, I'll get new sheets, but I don't ever think about how clean something is unless it's really painfully obvious.
Right. No, I completely agree with you on that one. Maybe we should get our wives to chime in on this, you know, or maybe not.
Yeah. Talking about how we're both damaged.
Yeah. And then Neil gives a look over once again at the bed, and we get this great musical tone once again, just accentuating the fact that, okay, this is a very small bed for two men to be sharing who don't know each other at all.
One of the things I want to lay the seed right here for not only that musical note for the bed, but then we're going to get some music at the end of the minute. You know, you brought up yesterday about the whole song, the state song of Kansas is Home on the Range.
Yeah.
And how my first recollection of that was from cartoons, Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd or Porky Pig. I swear to God, this movie, the soundtrack in so many ways reminds me of the background soundtrack you would imagine in a cartoon. Funky noise when you go to the bed, when he's in the shower. It sounds like a cartoon soundtrack.
I'm very curious as to whether John Hughes did that on purpose.
I have to believe, now that I'm thinking about it, it has to be intentional. It feels too much like we're watching a live action cartoon.
Could be. Yeah. Well, I never thought about it that way. It's a great way of looking at this. It's definitely true. Well, especially the way that so much happens to these characters over the course of just 93 minutes.
Right. Well, I was going to say, as you go along, maybe you can figure out how those musical notes sound as they get worse and worse in their circumstances. But, I mean, this particular minute and next minute, every bit of it, from the bed to the shower to the room to every bit of the music, just feels like I'm watching a Bugs Bunny cartoon.
Okay. And we actually will get a little bit into that tomorrow about cartoons. But we'll save that for tomorrow. We'll keep people in suspense till tomorrow to know what I'm referring to at that point. So okay. Then, you know, Dell continues with his little chit chat and says something that shocks Neil even more. He goes, "So you want to take a shower?" And he screams, "No!"
And of course, Dell doesn't think about how it's being interpreted. He really doesn't mean it any other way than, you know, "Do you want to take a shower?" Like, first, do you want to take a shower? But not necessarily meaning with me.
Exactly. And so Dell immediately catches that though and responds, "Oh no! I meant, do you want to go first? You know." And then he goes, "You thought I wouldn't? No. Go ahead." And then he goes, "What do you think I am? God, no." And then the two of them laugh it off, you know, at that point.
Right. And that's something I wanted to comment, because I think John Hughes gave them the latitude to try to do some improv. I think a lot of it, they just said, you know, kind of play with it. And the way Steve Martin reacts, the genuine laugh of the misunderstanding, almost makes me feel like this was more improv. I don't know. You've got the script and maybe they did it exactly. It just came across as very real, like two performers used to kind of playing off of each other.
All right, I'll give a little bit of a spoiler here. This is not in the script, so you're probably right about the fact that this is something that was completely improvised by the two of them, and it works really well.
It does. If you look right where Dell kind of gives the thumbs up and a point over to Neil, and he's like, "You thought I'm." They both look like they're almost breaking character, yeah. Just for a second, just enough. Because they are really playing in true improv off of each other. Because with improv, you never change the facts. When somebody says something, you can't say, "Oh no, but what you meant to say," you have to go with it. And right. So when Neil hears, "Do you want to take a shower?" He's like, "What?" You know, they just run with it. It's really good.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can see how they both play these characters very uncomfortable during this conversation as they see what's going on. You know, it's something that they want to just let it pass by and feel that it went through very smoothly. But you can still see that both of them are on edge about this little conversation, which if you're right about the fact that it was improv, that's just great, because it once again shows how great both of them are as performers, that they're able to have this type of conversation. And on the one hand, show that they're uncomfortable, but make it sound as if they're OK with and they are comfortable.
It rolls very, very believably in terms of just two guys who've – there's some innuendo that both of them are like, "Oh, no, I didn't – oh, no, not that. I don't mean that. Oh, yeah. Not with me." Just plays very well.
And this is pre-Seinfeld. So, you know, then someone would have said, not that there's anything wrong with that. You know, there's – Right. So, and then the scene switches and we see Neil in the shower. Enjoying his shower. He's very close to the shower head, enjoying the hot shower that he's taking, you know, and then he looks up and he sees the shower curtains, the shower curtain rings, and says, "All right, okay, this is why Dell is here. This is what Dell has brought to the party." You know, and like he smiles to himself saying, "Okay, yeah. All right. It could be worse. I got a place to stay. You know, I'll figure out where I'm going to be sleeping in a few minutes, but at least I'm having a nice hot shower right now." You know, little does he know what's about to happen a few seconds after this happens. But, you know, he looks up, he's smiling, and he starts lathering up. And then we go back out into the room, and we see Dell sitting on the bed. He's sitting actually on the I'm trying to think if you would say that he's on the left side of the bed or if he's on the right side of the bed, because, you know, if you're lying on the bed, he's on the right side, but if you're looking at the bed, he's on the left side. So what would you say?
Well, to make it easier for the audience in their head, he's on the side of the bed closest to the door, but then we'll eventually switch to the other side.
Right. Okay. Right. But he has his trunk on that side.
He has the trunk. Like, he doesn't care where all of his stuff is.
Exactly. That was the point I was trying to make, that he starts off on the right-hand side of the bed where his stuff is, and then he goes to lie down on the left-hand side.
Yep.
Yeah. And he doesn't try and move his bag or anything like that. He doesn't care. Or
no,
not his bag.
It's the weirdest thing. Because again, once we've said it this week, he's such an affable. He tries to be likable. You get the sense that he's never really met somebody that he doesn't like, but it seems like he's totally callous about somebody else's concerns, as we're going to see, I think tomorrow with the towels. But I mean,
yeah.
Here he is with the bed. He's it's like this is his own room. He's owning the place.
Yeah, completely. Now, if you look on the bed, there's what looks like a phone book on the bed.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes no sense whatsoever in the context of the movie. In the script, it will make sense. So this is another more proof that there was a lot more that was filmed that they cut out and that they weren't able to edit this out. You know, there's just a phone book sitting there which doesn't tell us anything. What would be your guess? I'm not going to tell you the answer until we start talking about the script. But what would be your guess of why there's a phone book on the bed?
My first thought would be they're trying to find a place to order takeout or try to see if anybody delivers food.
Okay. And you are definitely right. And we'll talk about that.
Do I know John Hughes?
Yay. Yes, you do, Alan. Good guess. There you go. It's an educated guess, and that's the way it needs to be. You know?
It's the only thing I'm educated on in my life is movies.
Why not? It's something. So am I.
Yeah. It beats nothing.
That's true. It makes us very prolific because we know so many different areas because of it. It's not as if we just know one general area of movies, but because every movie is different and there's a lot more going on. So, you know, we know a lot more about many different subjects. That works.
Yeah, this little side conversation. And my kids, now that they're older, they finally get it. But one of the things that used to make my girls just amazed, we would watch a brand new movie or there'd be a TV show or some of the episodic things we'd watch on Netflix or whatever. And I would just suddenly say, I'm like, oh, well, obviously it's going to be this, or obviously this happens next, or thanks to that, we know it's going to go here. And they would always go, how do you know? Because it would turn out to be true. I said, well, you get to a point where you've seen enough movies and you understand the movie language about foreshadowing when a camera either lingers or someone says something, mm-hmm. and you hear the music kind of cue you. That's an important thing to remember. If you're astute and you're not just passively watching, if you're an active movie watcher, you can kind of predict what's going to happen next.
Yeah. I have the same thing when I watch movies with anyone in my family, and they're also surprised that now part of the whole thing is that I always am looking for the movie that will change that trope, you know, that it will seem predictable and then they're going to switch it up on us. But unfortunately it doesn't happen very often.
You know, one series that did that for me and I just loved it. It only lasted one series. And then they did do a movie to kind of finish it up. But the Firefly series, I don't know if you've ever watched
it.
Yeah,
of course.
But writing of course. Firefly, every time I thought I knew what someone was going to say or how it was going to go or what was going to happen next, almost always I got thrown for a left hook.
Yeah, Josh Whedon did a great job with Firefly. No question about that.
Very few shows or movies manage to do that very well, let alone sustain it.
Yeah, and the problem is that most people don't care.
True.
If more people were like us and they cared, you know, then they wouldn't be, you know, putting out the same crap all the time. You know, mm-hmm. they'd give us more shocking stuff, more stuff that changes and doesn't do what you expect. But people like what they like, and you know, just continues that way. So right.
Well, and there is something to say that the reason certain formulas work is because we like those same stories. It's the whole. Like what bothered me for the longest time is I used to like watching romantic comedies with my wife. Those were fun, but it was always pretty simple. Boy meets girl, boy does something stupid, boy loses girl, boy has to get girl back. The movie ends, boy gets girl back. Simple formula. We like it. We want
completely.
When they try to change it, then you get angry. You're like, wait a minute, this isn't a romantic comedy anymore. And I don't know what you're doing.
That's right.
So there is something to be said about archetypes and formulas that we want, you know, so I guess we'll take it with a grain of salt. You don't have to always surprise us just for the sake of surprise.
Right. Correct. But you also don't want everything to be completely predictable because, you know, then you're just taking the same situation and you're putting them in a different place. That's all you're doing. It's the same story, you know, whatever. So back to Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Oh, yeah, there's a movie we're talking about. Okay.
Yeah, cool. We should go back to that a little bit, you know. So Dell is sitting on the bed, and he pulls out of the trunk, he pulls a pillow and what looks like a picture frame. And then we get a – then it quickly jumps back to Neil in the shower. He's lathering up his face, you know, which I don't know about you, but I don't necessarily wash my face that way in the shower. You know, he's quite leisurely doing it. I don't know.
Yeah, I get it for comedy. I've never in my life have had the water just suddenly stop. Just like this.
Right. Okay. That's true.
No reason whatsoever.
That's true. But
had it suddenly change temperature, but not stop.
Yeah, that happens all the time. Now,
honestly, even if the water pressure drops or somebody's using it somewhere else, it goes a lot lower, or it may trickle, but it doesn't ever just shut off. Like,
right.
This looks like somebody shut it off.
Yeah. They had a plumbing problem, and just, you know, someone they called the plumber, and he just turned off the pipe. Uh-huh. And so it like turns off completely, and we get this like groaning sound, which is another musical tone, which goes back to what you're saying about it does feel like a cartoon, the way that
Well, and even the violins plucking in the background when he's having such a wonderful time in the shower initially feels sort of like that setup in a cartoon where it's like idyllic. And everything's working. And then all of a sudden, when it does it, it's like dun dun. And you get the musical note go with it. I mean, it's very cartoony.
Yeah. So, and, you know, he's got the soap in his eyes. First of all, he does a great job of acting here, because obviously he really does have soap in his eyes, or he has something in his eyes at the time that they're doing this. I maybe they would use something that wouldn't sting or something like that. I don't know. But it really looks like he's got soap in his eyes.
Oh, yeah, especially when he, like, opens it the first time and then squints and then squints really hard when he realizes, oh, it ran in there. Ah.
Exactly.
And then, like,
I'm trying to think of what you could use as in place of soap so that it wouldn't sting him. I don't know.
I imagine they would have just used soap, and it's such a mild thing anyway that you – I'm sure as an actor, he's put himself through worse or more uncomfortable things than just some typical bar soaps, because that's what it looks like. Just, I don't think they would have gone through any effort to worry about it, because anything else foreign in your eyes would probably sting anyway.
Right. That's true. And then, as you said, he says, oh, come on. And he shouts out, like, can this get any worse is more or less what he's saying. It's like, I was just enjoying my shower, and now it just completely stopped. And like the way that he moves around back and forth, it looks like he's sort of praying, yeah, or cursing at the same time, that how can this happen to me like this? And as we see him going through this agony, it jumps back into the room, and we see Dell walking around the bed leisurely, throws his pillow on the bed. He's looking at the picture that he's holding. You know, he's you can even see that he's got a cigarette in one of his in his hand. You know, he's taking his time. He's enjoying himself. And then he looks down lovingly at this picture. And then that's when the minute actually ends. Mm-hmm. So tomorrow we'll get more of an idea as to what is going on there.
And I think reiterating what you said, he started off on the one side of the bed, sitting on it. Usually if you're thinking about, well, we're going to share a bed, I'll keep one side pristine for the other person. Now he sat on it. He got his trunk from that side, walks around to this side, puts his personal pillow on this other side now, and he's getting ready to sit on this side. He's not even thinking about the fact the bed's got to be shared right now.
Right. I mean, he doesn't seem to care at all. Doesn't bother him. And you can sort of hear the TV a little bit, but you're not really, you know, it's hard to tell exactly what you can hear on the TV. Tomorrow we'll get more of an idea as to what's being said on the TV. But again, he's moved in.
Yeah.
You know, he's comfortable here. This is, I mean, as we know, this is his lifestyle as a salesman. You know, he's constantly going from place to place, staying in motels along the way. Now, if you look in the back, we saw before that Neil put his hat above, you know, on that shelf near the entrance to the room. But if you look here, you can see that Dell has stuffed his jacket on that same shelf. So I wonder if he's crushed the hat or if he, you know, that we can't tell. But it just, you can see his jacket is wrapped up in a bowl and put there instead. I mean, like, you'd think that he would have hung it up on a hanger or whatever, but he just wraps it up and sticks it on the shelf.
Well, the thing is I don't know if we ever see Steve Martin put his hat on the shelf. He's there. And I will tell you just a little bit of a continuity thing. And I think we're going to get to a nice setup here. This would be a great transition to what you told me is a bunch of extra stuff that got filmed, but didn't make the scene. If you go back to when he's looking at the shelf and dusting it off, there's nothing there. Zero, right?
Yeah.
It's completely empty. And then it cuts to a shot of the bed. And then we come back. And if you look, the next shot,
now I see that.
His jacket is already stuffed up on top of the shelf.
Yeah, I didn't notice that before. You're right. When they start talking about taking a shower. Very good. Good catch, Alan. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. My job here is done.
There you go. All right. You don't have to even come back tomorrow. You're done.
No. I mean, just for today.
All right. Anything else you want to say about this minute?
No, that's going to do it.
All right. So the script, there is so much more in the script in this scene that is not shown in the movie that was apparently filmed and it was all completely cut out. I'm going to try and keep it brief because we don't want to go too long. But we'll try. I'll try. So first of all, the script doesn't even have this conversation between the two of them about taking a shower and about the hell of a cab ride and all that stuff. It just starts off immediately with Neil in the shower. Okay. Now, while he's taking a shower, we see Dell is already in his pajamas and robe outside. He takes a pillow and a framed photograph out of his trunk, and he looks at the photo fondly. And in the script, it says it's a young woman, friendly and comfy and smiling like a Crest ad. The photo's probably 15 years old. So tomorrow we'll see. We'll talk about the photo itself because we actually get to see it. But the fact that they mention this in the script that it's 15 years old really opens up a lot of information that is not revealed until the end of this movie. So that's amazing that. You know, John Hughes already knew that was where he was going here, which it says a lot about it. And then it says that right. Dell actually kisses the picture and sets it on the nightstand next to the bed. He closes the trunk, slides it against the wall, and then he takes his dop kit out of the suitcase. Okay, now do you know what a dop kit is?
No.
Okay. Hey, you were in the military. You should know what a dop kit is.
Maybe I don't know it by that term. I don't know what a dop kit is.
Okay, so a dop kit is another name for a toiletry bag.
Okay. Oh, okay.
It's known as a dop kit. It was a term that was coined. The idea of a toiletry bag for men was created by a man named Charles Doppelt, whose company designed it in 1926. And during World War II, it became synonymous with the type of bags issued to soldiers to keep their toiletries in. Now, I found so many different names for a toiletry bag. I was just amazed. Okay. It's known as a toiletry bag, a toiletry kit, a ditty bag, a dop kit, a bathroom kit, a sponge bag, a toilet bag, a toilet kit, a toilet article kit, a body hygiene kit, a travel kit, a wash bag, a shaving kit, or a wet pack.
Okay. Now, of all of those, beyond the typical toilet bag or toiletry bag, the one that I did remember was a ditty bag. That's okay. What we called it. So that was our term in the Navy, the ditty bag.
Okay, very good. Now, it usually is a pouch with a drawstring or a zippered closure, and it usually holds body hygiene and toiletry supplies, for instance, toothbrush, toothpaste, dental floss, cotton swabs, deodorant, nail clippers, tweezers, soap, shaving supplies, hairbrush, contact lenses, and other supplies. And it's basically used for traveling and in other circumstances where permanent shelves or cupboards are unavailable or impractical for use, which makes sense. You know, mm-hmm. You want to keep all your stuff in there. So that's what a doc kit is. So then it talks about the fact that that Dell goes over and turns on the TV and starts listening to a radio program, of a religious radio program, or a religious program on TV, like maybe the 700 Club or something like that. I don't know. Again, I don't know why they mentioned that in the script of what he's listening to. It could be that, okay, it's the middle of the night and that's the only thing that's on, so that's what I'm going to listen to.
Yeah, it sounds like a commentary on Midwest America, late 80s, of what you would find late night TV, some paid programming from a church or a televangelist of some kind.
Yeah, could be. And then goes back to Neil in the shower, and he wants to take the soap, and the soap is filled with hair. And he's completely disgusted by it.
Oh, that would have been gross.
And then he like takes it and like holds it in a very strange way and tries to wash it off with the shower in order to be able to use the soap. Okay. And okay, while he's doing this,
I could see Steve Martin doing that in my mind's eye.
And that's the point. That's the point. And while he's doing this, he senses a presence in the bathroom and turns slowly to his left. And then it says, through the translucent shower curtain, he sees the outline of Dell sitting on the toilet reading the paper.
Oh, come on.
And it says he's horrified at Dell's casualness.
Okay. Oh, coming in to take a dump while I'm taking my shower. Come on.
Exactly. And then there's a loud knock on the door of the room. Okay. And Dell yells out, I'll be with you in a minute, from the bathroom. And Neil is in complete terror as he's misinterpreting it, because he thinks that Dell is talking to him, even though Dell's talking to the guy who's at the door of the motel room. Okay. Then it says that Dell flushes the toilet and then strolls out of the bathroom with his newspaper under his arm. And at this point, Neil shrieks because the temperature in the shower changes because he just flushed the toilet.
Now that has happened to me.
Yes. Yeah. By Dell or in your own house?
No, not Dell, not Dell. Someone in the house, well, not necessarily the house anymore, but older houses when I was growing up were not quite as efficient with their hot and cold plumbing. But yeah, I have had that happen. So yeah, I can identify.
Yeah, okay. So Dell goes and opens up the door, and there's a pizza boy there who has pizza and beer. So Dell asks him, how much is it? And he says, $19. So Dell takes the pizza and the beer and walks in, and the pizza boy hears someone in the shower, okay, and gives Dell a big thumbs up, thinking that Dell has some woman in there with him.
Right.
Okay, now Dell tries to find his wallet and can't find his wallet, and then he finds Neil's wallet. So he takes $20 out of Neil's wallet to go pay for the pizza and beer. Okay. So he gives the 20 to the pizza boy, and he says, you can keep the change. So in other words, you give him a dollar change.
Dollar tip.
And the pizza boy goes, this is a 20. And he goes, yeah, it is. And he goes, the pizza was 19. He says, yeah, I believe that's what you said. The extra is for you. Put it towards your college fund. So then the boy says, well, that's like just a 5% tip. So Doug goes, hey, you're pretty good with figures. You'll do well in college. And then the boy says, yeah. Then he goes, you know what I call a 5% tip? And then Dell actually just closes the door on him.
Funny stuff.
Yeah. And then the basically the before this happens, so Neil hears the ruckus on the outside and he sticks his head out of the shower, and the pizza boy sees him, and the pizza boy gets the wrong impression also, because you know beforehand he thought that Dell was there, you know, with a woman, and then he sees him there with Neil, and he's like, oh, okay.
Got so, it.
Yeah, they, it's just pretty funny the way that they do that whole thing. At this point, he then puts the pizza on the trunk and then the beer on the vibrating bed, which is something else that will be discussed next week. Okay. So I like the way that they have this extra scene here. Now, here's a spoiler for – actually, you know what? I'm not even going to spoil it. The person who plays the pizza boy actually shows up later. But we'll leave people – we'll keep people on the edge to try and figure out by next week or maybe it's the week after, you know, who the pizza boy really is.
All right. I like it. I like it. Look at you. You're learning how to tease and keep people coming back for more.
Yep, that's what we're doing. And you see, I got you on the edge, too.
I know. I like sat up. I was like, who?
And that's pretty much the whole thing with the script. But I'm still debating whether this is good that they cut this out or not. I mean, I like it because it's fun, but it might have just been too much. Mm. I mean, that's the obvious reason why they cut it.
I get the feeling, and we talked about this a little bit yesterday, that all of the bits were probably really good, but when you have too many bits, you can actually ruin the bigger punchlines. And if you already had a scene where some stranger is, oh, never mind, I thought it was a woman, it's a man, it's two men sleeping together, it may have taken away from the scene that comes in later about the pillows.
Right. Okay, that's true. I agree with you on that part. That part I can understand was cut out. But the whole exchange between Dell and the pizza boy and the fact that Dell is in the bathroom, that's also something. Because we'll talk about that tomorrow. You know, I think those are things that should have been left in there in order to give us a little bit more of an idea of what type of person Dell is. But as I said, we'll get to that more tomorrow.
Okay.
So that's all I have for the script. So every day we have our little segment off the beaten track. So Neil. Alan. Alan. Do you have another story that you'd like to tell us?
Well, you know, I didn't write any of these down. I kind of wanted to see what would just pop in my head based on the minute. And this reminded me of being in a smaller hotel room and everything. When I was first divorced and had to go on a trip with my girls, wanted to go on a trip with my girls, and it was just a daddy-daughter kind of vacation, for me, I realized I was getting kind of we weren't planning to live in the hotel. You know, I've never been one of those people who gets why people would spend $200 or $300 a night for a hotel for a town where they're going to go, let's say, sightsee all day long, and they're only going to come back to sleep, get up in the morning, take a shower, and go back and be gone all day. To me, right. I just need a clean bed and a shower. I don't need anything extravagant. So to me, I was like, okay, we've got kind of an okay place, maybe not the best decorated. My girls thought it was such a cool adventure, and it just made me realize context is really everything, and little kids probably aren't going to pay attention to how gaudy a decor is, or whether something has old fixtures, or the bed isn't modern. The fact that they're sleeping someplace special, someplace different, they're doing an adventure, that's all they care about. And as a dad, I realized those are the kinds of things they'll be talking about when they get older. And so I've always tried to strive to not downplay where we were and give them kind of a negative view, but to always have fun wherever we were.
Okay, cool. That makes sense. Excellent. All right. So you want to tell people once again how they can get in touch with you?
Sure. The podcast that I do that is very similar to this with my buddy Walt Murray, it's called The Wilder Ride. It was inspired by the movies of Gene Wilder. Season one, we broke down Young Frankenstein 1 minute at a time. And then season two, we did it with Blazing Saddles. Brought guests in, much like what we're doing here. And it was just a lot of fun, and certainly learned a whole lot about two movies that I thought I already knew a lot about to begin with. So check it out, The Wilder Ride. You can look on any of your podcatchers. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or you can go to the website, thewilderride.com.
Cool. And that's more or less what Movies by Movie Minutes do. They let you know that as much as you thought you knew about a movie, you know nothing.
It's great.
Yeah.
Well, we did a lot of what you're kind of doing. I love approaching a movie by finding the shooting script or what's supposed to be the final authorized version of the script that they blessed to go shoot the film with. And I love finding things that they shot that they left out or things that they rearranged in the edit. I've always liked that little bit of trivia from behind the scenes. So that's another thing I love about listening to these kind of podcasts.
Yeah, for sure. Now, there's one thing you just pointed out, and I forgot to mention this when I was talking before about the script. So it actually also described the pizza, and I didn't do that. So I'll actually now describe the pizza. It says that they give a shot of the pizza, and it says the ugliest pizza ever made. Cheese, sausage, olives, green peppers, jalapenos, kraut, bacon, beans, corn, anchovies. And then it says it shows Dell, then take a piece of the abomination out of the box.
Well, except for about three items, I don't know that would be a bad pizza.
Well, what's your favorite type of pizza?
My favorite is a three-topping pizza. It's a pepperoni, mushroom, green pepper.
All right. For me, it was always – I always love corn – and tuna. I don't know why, but it was just
to say, I've never heard of tuna on a pizza. So,
oh, you should try it.
Okay.
You should definitely try it.
You know, there aren't many ways to screw up a pizza.
It's probably true. All right. Well, you can rate and review and subscribe on any podcatcher that might be using to listen to the show. And you can find me by just doing a search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, on Twitter, on our website. So, Alan, you feel like you feeling lucky enough to come back tomorrow to finish off this week?
I think I've got the intestinal fortitude. Yeah, I can do it.
All right. Very good. Well, until tomorrow, you're
fucked. You're fucked.